For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Well, finally, it has happened. Charles Leclerc has won the Monaco Grand Prix. I'm not going to come with any sort of fancy or, you know, sort of like witty introductions. That's all I've got to say. Leclerc's won his home race. Welcome to Grid Talk. My name is Tom Downey, and here today we are going to discuss the 2024 Monaco Grand Prix. Joining me, we have, who are you, George? You are George Howson, and you are the OG brains behind Grid Talk. Hello, sir.
Evening, Tom. Yes, that's who I am.
Yes, I'm pretty happy that Leclerc won, as you might be able to figure out. And also joining us is Grid Talk co-host again, Owen Medford.
Hello.
Hello, sir. Just before we get into this episode, we must thank our sponsor, Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoffs stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores are available to follow for your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet Online, where the game starts. Also, please be sure to use our new socials, @GridTalkUK, to stay up to date with the show. So, now that the sort of housekeeping is out of the way, George said it in the intro, Charles Leclerc, 2024 Monaco Grand Prix victor. It's his home race. He dedicated the race to his dad at the end, which is a really, really touching moment. And yeah, I mean, over to you.
Yeah, it was great. It was great to see him do that. And you could tell he was really holding back the tears while he was saying it too, how much it really meant to him. I mean, to win around your home track after all this time, after everything that's happened to him. You know, he's had pole in the past and not been able to start. He's been in the lead before and Ferrari botched the strategy. You know, he's had everything go wrong over the years. He's never won in Monaco in any category, I don't believe, before today. And he's never done it, and he's certainly never done it in F1. So I'm so happy he's done it, absolutely. It's great for him. You know, it's great for Formula One as well, just to get another winner in there, you know. That's the fourth different winner we've had this season, which isn't too bad at this stage of the season when you think about it. And yeah, I mean, he set an amazing pole time yesterday. He took the lead in both starts, both the start and the restart after the red flag. And yeah, he did. I mean, they covered it in commentary. I think Martin Brundle said it. You know, Alan Prost in particular used to win the race by the smallest possible margin. I think for the most part for this race, that's what he was doing. He was doing just enough to keep Oscar Piastri behind. Oscar Piastri was, you know, eating his tyres up. But then in the last stages, Charles Leclerc just absolutely went for it and ended up winning by over 7 seconds. And I think at a time he was about 10 seconds ahead of second as well. So fantastic for him. A complete performance, a complete weekend for him. And it's, you know, and you never know, that could really give him a massive boost, in particular for Ferrari. So yeah, I'm so happy it's finally happened for him. And if anybody deserves to win the home race, it's definitely Charles Leclerc, and he's proved it today.
Absolutely. This is what time lucky for Leclerc, I believe, because he's had a DNF and a DNS around here before, and then he finished sixth, I believe, or maybe fourth in 2022. And then last year, I'm facing, he was on the podium. I could be getting my years wrong. But he said that a podium will not be enough. He said he wants to win. He said he has to win, and he's done it. And yeah, it's put him second in the constructors. He's on 138 points. He's ahead of Lando, who's on 113. And he is obviously behind Max, who's on 169 points. But also for the constructors, this bumps Ferrari up to second with 252 points, where they are only marginally behind Red Bull, who are on 276. So, you know, at the start of the year, we were sort of bemoaning Red Bull for, you know, sort of romping away with the win in Bahrain, and then Saudi looking much the same. But it looks like our prayers might have been answered this year. Someone whose prayers weren't answered, Owen, in this race was Sergio Perez. Now, we'll get onto that incident in a bit, as that's a talking point in itself. But we had a red flag on lap one due to the incident between Perez and both Haas drivers, mainly Magnussen. But like I said, we'll talk about that in a bit. Do you think that the red flag sort of hindered the race today? Because we saw drivers who had started on the mediums, they swapped to the hards, such as the top four, and then they just didn't pit for the entirety of the race and just drove around for 76 laps and brought it home.
I think one of the reasons that we didn't get a grand slam out of Charles Leclerc there was because there were, for the majority of the Grand Prix, we're talking 60 laps or so, and possibly even longer, we had drivers nursing their tires. I mean, that was very clearly what the top four were doing. Leclerc was, you know, obviously driving around at, you know, at the minimum speed possible to not get overtaken, and which is obviously quite slow in Monaco, and prevent Norris from having any kind of gap that would prevent him from opening up any kind of gap that would allow Norris to start applying pressure in any meaningful way. And, you know, similarly with Russell, and, you know, Russell was not driving around particularly quickly. He had an even bigger problem in that he had the medium tires, as did Verstappen and Hamilton behind him, so they were all nursing their tires. And this just isn't a circuit that necessarily, you know, it's not a high downforce circuit, or it's a high wing angle circuit, but it's not a high downforce circuit. It's not particularly quick, so there's not a chance of you sort of washing wide in the wake so much as there is at other tracks. And as a result of that, they just cut, you know, all the drivers just sort of, you know, backed off, nursed their cars to the finish line. I mean, we saw a little bit of the pit stops, and that really shows what I think was maybe the saving grace, or sort of the counterpoint, which is that even with new hard tires that he was pounding around on, or very lightly used hard tires that he was pounding around on, with something like a 50 lap tire deficit, Max Verstappen in what is, you know, what we call the fastest car on the grid, obviously it seemed to be a little slower. It doesn't seem to suit Monaco this so well, and Monaco seems to take away its advantages, but Verstappen could not get past George Russell as a result, funnily enough, of the tire saving. So I think what it did do was it robbed us of the chance for drivers to make a mistake from pushing very, very quickly. Sorry, from pushing too hard and trying to drive quickly. But I think, you know, it did sort of change the race in such a way that we didn't really get that. So, yeah, I think it did sort of ruin the race a little bit. But, you know, therefore it made it a lot easier for Charles.
Yeah, it on paper may have looked sort of plain sailing for Leclerc. Obviously, he led every lap and brought it home for the victory. He still had to get off the line, and he still had to hold the lead into turn one and hold his nerve. And he said it himself, he did just enough to keep the win. And we saw that pay dividends, because George mentioned earlier, we saw Piastri ultimately burn up his tyres a little bit. And then we saw Leclerc just pull away victorious, and that left, well, to be honest, that left Piastri almost exposed to losing P2 to Sainz. And in my head, I was thinking, when was the last time we had a Ferrari 1-2? And it was, I think it was some point in 2022, but I can't quite remember. But let's have a look at some of the incidents that happened in this race, because let's be real, that was about the only thing on that one. This is about all that did happen in this race, because it wasn't a classic, let's be real. But one thing that was classic was the Alpines running into each other once again. So, as on lap one, after we'd had all the shenanigans of turns three through Mirabeau, we then got greasy with the lovely sight of the two Alpines just running into the back of each other. Then Stroll, for good measure, said, "Oh, I need a piece of that," and then also got involved, apparently. Although I didn't see that, I wouldn't be surprised if he did. George, we heard some rather stern words from Bruno Famin, the Alpine team principal. It translated to some form of, basically, Ocon needs to basically check himself before he wrecks himself. That's a slight paraphrase. But it's safe to say that the Alpine camp, after their torrid start to the year, do you think they perhaps missed an opportunity today? And what do you think will happen
in which the two drivers running into each other.
I'm not sure if they missed a big opportunity today. I mean, Gasly still brought it home in 10th, still got a point. It would have been difficult for Ocon to really get much out of it. I mean, yeah, we didn't have much passing today, like you said. And, it's important because it was at the restart, and, you know, that is often your best chance to pass around Monaco. Everybody's tyres are warming up, the brakes are warming up. No one's really in a rhythm at that point. So you can take advantage usually, but the golden rule in racing, you don't hit your teammate. And that's what Ocon did. And it was absolutely embarrassing. Now, we know that these guys don't like each other. We know they've got history and previous. I think I actually explained it in Drive to Survive, you know, a differing of opinion about an incident all the way back in karting. And I am absolutely sure that Pierre and Esteban have differing opinions on this incident. But the fact is that Ocon tried to close a gap where his teammate was, and Ocon flew up in the air, was out of the race. Ocon's got a 3-grid place penalty for the next race in Canada, but the real penalty for him is going to be with his team, you know, going off of what Famine said. And obviously, I'm sure it was directly translated from French, but it sounds to me as though Ocon's contract is not going to be renewed for next year. And some people even thinking that, well, maybe they're going to drop him for a race. I don't think they will. But there's going to be a very, very stern talking to by them. And Famine, of course, is new in this role. He needs to lay down his authority in the team. He can't let things like that slide. It's actually 5 places for Ocon. To be honest with you, he's lucky it couldn't be more, because it's a really, really bad incident. Poor drive. And if the likes of Lance Stroll did that, for example, we'd all be calling for them to, you know, get disqualification or whatever. So it was really bad by Ocon. But yeah, he's got, you know, Famine's really got to lay down his authority in the team, and he can't let things like that stand. And quite frankly, you know, yeah, it's a bad one for sure. So I think we could well see Ocon moving on. I mean, there's rumours about him going to Mercedes, potentially. At least there was, anyway. I don't think there's going to be many rumours about that now after that. So get the popcorn out, lads. It's going to be interesting watching what happens with Alpine going forward, because fuel has definitely been added to that fire.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, let's not forget that Toto Wolff used to be Ocon's manager back in the day. So, you know, while, you know, even if it's not a link now, it certainly used to be a link. And, you know, you've got to use the connections in these worlds. And of course, Ocon used to be a Mercedes junior driver. And, you know, but then you've got to ask the question, would you want to go there for 1 or 2 years to keep the seat warm for Antonelli? So plenty of questions to be asked there. You know, there's it, from what Bruno Famine said, it definitely looks like Ocon might be moving on from Team Alpine, and then hopefully we'd see Jack Doohan on the grid. Is that would most likely keep our resident Aussie Jowards very happy as well, you know, because we would still have 2 drivers on the grid, because I maintain Daniel Ricciardo would not be on the grid next year. But anyway, you know, so speaking of disappointments, Owain Perez, he had a bit of an issue with the Haas drivers on turn one. Now, I say that a bit tongue-in-cheek, because it's certainly in my eyes, Perez didn't do anything wrong. You know, he was just keeping his nose clean out of danger. And then K-Mag tried to have a look at up the inside on the right, perhaps didn't realise that the track sort of follows that natural curvature, especially with it being Monaco at that tight. He made his front left, made contact with the right rear Perez, spun his car into the wall, and then just absolute carnage ensued. Do you just want to give us your thoughts, perhaps a little bit on that, on that whole incident, and then the outcome of it as well?
For me, I don't think, I mean, obviously Hülkenberg is not to blame as the third driver in the collision that went out, and I don't think Perez is either. Now, Beau Rivage is a bit difficult as a straight, really. It's not a straight, it's a series of very gentle corners that we don't treat as corners. I personally think that Magnussen is very, very lucky to be not getting a penalty for the incident. And as much as I think he's flirting with the line for causing a collision, for me, we know that it's for me, it's sort of an unneeded incident. And I think Perez maybe could have left a little more room. But the fact is, it took all 3 drivers out of the race. There's a huge, you know, in one accident, there's probably $20 million, $30 million worth of damage. And I don't think Perez should have been there. I think it was a bad weekend in general. Yeah, it's a bad weekend in general, I think, for him. And I think it's one of those things, it's yet another thing where we sit there and think, you know, for a driver who's supposedly king of the street, should he have really been, you know, should he really be getting a contract extension or anything like that when there are other drivers to choose from, probably from F2 or even elsewhere on this grid? And I think he could have got out of the way. I think he needs to sort of, I think they all maybe could have had a little bit of fight fight for another day. I know it's Monaco. I know it's the first lap. I know it's your only real chance to get ahead. But that caused, you know, it caused a completely unnecessary incident. And the only person I can think is to blame is K-Mag, personally. I know we're going to go into a little bit more depth, but I think Perez could have, Perez could have left a little bit more room, but I don't think it's entirely his job to leave all the room. I think he's, unfortunately, you know, him and Magnussen have been an unlucky bystanders there.
No, that's a very, very fair point. Like he says, and like I said, we'll go into it a bit later on. But yeah, not the best driving from some of the oldest drivers and some of the most experienced drivers on the grid. You know, the only two I think who are older are Hamilton and Alonso. You know, I can't think of especially the other drivers are nappies these days. Oh, Danny Ric, but he should be in a retirement home. But yeah, looking at some other incidents in this race, George, we saw not under investigation, but noted by the stewards, an incident between Piastri and Sainz into turn one. So this was on the first lap. So this is the first standing start that we had. So this is the race start, not the rev flag restart. We saw second both times round. He left room to his right, and Sainz had arguably a better start than him. Sainz had a little look into Sandoval, and then Piastri committed to keeping hold of the position around the outside. A little bit of contact ensued, and that ultimately led to what certainly appeared to be a puncture for Sainz, and he went off at the hairpin, somewhat saved by the red flag, one could say, because he effectively got away with it. Bearing in mind, we saw Ocon get a penalty for his collision with Gasly, and then we saw nothing for Kevin Magnussen and his collision with Perez. Do you think? Oh God, how to phrase this without sounding like one of the sort of tinfoil hat people? Do you think the stewards maybe dropped the ball a bit here? You know, and once again, are we perhaps highlighting some inconsistencies? You know, within the stewarding this time, even just during a single race event.
I mean, there's definitely inconsistency with the stewards through these incidents for sure. I don't think that's a conspiracy theory at all. No, I think there's a lot of problems with what they've done and what they haven't done. I mean, I think Ocon absolutely should get the penalty that he did. I think that was right when we covered that one before. I mean, again, we'll go into it more in a bit, but I think K-Mag is unbelievably lucky not to get. And I'll see for what he did. But yeah, we'll cover that more in a bit. With the Piastri and the Sainz one, it's an interesting one. So Sainz, obviously, you know, he started on the clean side of the grid. He attacked Lando Norris into the first corner. He got a good start. And then there was contact between Piastri and Sainz. And Sainz got the puncture. Now, this is the first corner compared to Ocon and Gasly, where it was like the back end of the track. So it's not a first corner incident when it was the two Alpines. This was a first corner incident. You've also got to take into account the type of corner this is. Now, I'm lucky enough to have been to Monaco, and I can guarantee that the hill climb to the casino is extremely steep, much steeper than it looks like on the cameras with the cars. It's also a very, very, even for Monaco standards, a very, very narrow part of the track. And it's also a part where you are desperately looking to go as fast as possible up to the run into the casino, whereas at the Portiere, it's two very slow right-handers. So I understand why the stewards didn't give a penalty for that between them. I feel like it was a bit of first corner incidents, a bit of, you know, 6-1, half a dozen the other. But what is absolutely not in doubt, like you said, Tom, is the fact that Sainz got incredibly lucky with that. He was out of the race, no doubt, if it wasn't for the red flag. And if the red flag came a little earlier, I believe that they would have had to go for a rolling start, which would have meant that he wouldn't be able to restart. So he got very, very lucky in a number of factors there. But I personally don't have a problem with the Piastri and Sainz incident not getting a penalty. I have much more of a problem with K-Mag not getting a penalty for his incident. But yeah, I think you're right. I don't think it's a conspiracy theory to suggest that the stewards are inconsistent. People who follow Formula One like we do, and like a lot of our listeners and viewers do, know that this is not new. The stewards are very inconsistent from race to race. And in this case, even in the same race. So it's baffling, really.
Yeah, I'm glad you understood what I was getting at, because what I was trying to say was, you know, is this sort of like just I don't even know what to start. I'm just gonna move on because I'm gonna end up ripping into the stewards and yeah, I'm gonna get clipped. All right. One of the things we sort of mentioned earlier was the red flag. I give you this topic, actually. The red flag did somewhat ruin any form of any real race. Now, obviously, it's Monaco. You have to take it with a pinch of salt because the streets are incredibly narrow. The cars are very wide, yada, yada, yada. We didn't see any change in the top 10 today. Now, do you think this, you know, plus when you sort of think about DRS down the one straight that we have, doesn't really seem to be that effective. Do you think that there's anything that could be done for Monaco, you know, bearing in mind that the top 10 order didn't change and the sort of the bottom 10 only changed a little bit, you know, due to some DNFs and then one or two actual on-track overtakes, which did wake me up. You know, do you think there's anything that can be done for Monaco, or do you think it's just the characteristics of the circuit?
No, I think what we've maybe noticed, if you go back and watch previous Monaco Grand Prix where the cars were, I mean, right, for me, it's the size of the cars. It's fundamentally the size of the cars. And I don't think this particular form of, like, the street circuit for a ground effect car, I haven't looked too far into the previous era of ground effect cars, but we're dealing with a different era entirely, you know, with not using skirts and instead using sort of air to seal the floor, which the teams are relatively good at. I think for me, the fact is that the cars are large. The cars are too big and they're too bulky. And they're too heavy. You know, you're taking a car which, even with the maximum wheelbase now, if you take the current Mercedes, it is about the same size as a Maybach. You know, it's 5.5 meters long. It's 2 meters wide. It weighs 900 kilos. And I know that's fairly dainty and it's got a lot more grip than a Maybach in terms of weight, but it's still, you know, and it's obviously got several tons more downforce. But at a certain point, it's quite difficult to maneuver that quickly around the circuit. You try, you know, if you're in a standard road car, even with all the horsepower in the world, you would never go for an overtake down any of Monaco's streets. And I think in some ways, I mean, I've got nothing to back this up from an engineering point of view, but I would look at it and I'd just say that, well, you know, as the gaps get closer, you're starting to need larger and larger, you know, the deltas that we're needing. You know, we're in excess of, it must be in excess of 2 seconds, bearing in mind that Max Verstappen had 2 seconds lap quicker tyres at one point than George Russell. And as much as George Russell had saved his tyres and was able to, you know, maybe nurse that gap down a bit, the delta that you need is now so large that you have to practically be alongside by the time of the acceleration zones at Monaco to even get past. And I think as much as, yes, it is easier to follow it, that it doesn't get away from the thermal problem of these cars are now so, you know, it ruins your tyres and it ruins your brakes. So there's no way of you sending a move down in Sandevot. The only time we ever saw it was Lance Stroll on Sargent, I believe, you know, sending it up the inside and doing a quick switchback. But I think that was as a result more of, like I say, the tyre deficit of Logan Sargeant rather than anything to do with the ability of either of those drivers, really. So I think, I'm not sure there's anything we can do about it. Unfortunately, the top 10 is now so close that there is no deficit, there is no change. And you'd have to have one of those guys having an issue in qualifying to get them out of position and have them, you know, having to fight through the field. And it just doesn't happen anymore. The scope isn't there. So I think it's just one of those things that I think we're at the point now where Monaco is its own race. And yes, it's difficult. Yes, it's, you know, we saw you can still make mistakes and you can still hit the walls. And that's easier to do now that the cars are 2 meters wide. But I just think that if we found a way to slim down the cars, if possible, I mean, we're hoping against hope for technology here because it's been 10 years of hybrid racing, something like, what is it, 7? With these much larger, much physically larger cars, but you know, you just cannot get past. And I think it's a size issue more than anything. You can't dance a car around the streets of Monaco on the throttle anymore. It just doesn't happen. And the teams know that, and rather than burn their tyres up or anything, they just go, right, we'll manage the tyres. And that's it. Because they know the penalty of not doing that. I think that's what we have here. And I don't know how any way we could solve it, you know, apart from implement things that, you know, for example, Lewis Hamilton suggested, such as special tyres or anything like that, or mandatory two stops. I think you need weather or something to make Monaco interesting, and we just don't have that anymore.
Yeah, no, very, very good point, Owen. And, you know, especially, you know, you said about, you know, either a mandatory pit stop or, you know, or having some form of, you know, some form of weather, because we saw the last two previous Monaco Grand Prix, 2023 and 2022, were rain-affected races. And, you know, we've seen sort of like just how good a race that can make it. There's so much you can do. And you said it yourself, wishing for technology against technology's sake. You know, when the cars are not going to go back to sort of what they were previously, and, you know, especially with all the, you know, updated security features and the hybrid systems and all the rest of it, they are smaller than the sort of 2017 era cars, but they're still, you know, like you said, they're like the size of a Maybach, which is not a small car. But yeah, that's certainly it for sort of like individuals, for like panis. But one thing, and I think you probably both know where I'm going to go with this, is this is pretty much the main talking point from the race. K-Mag and the incident. Now, we've all seen the onboards. We've all seen, you know, where his front axle was in relation to Perez's rear axle. Do you think he deserved a penalty for that? What I also sort of going to ask in this is, we need to take out the equation. We need to take out the equation. You know, he's only 2 or 3 points away from a race ban. Let's just focus solely on the one incident. And George, if you want to go first, and then you go after. If you just have a discussion between the three of us about it, I'm really not bothered either way. Do you think Magnussen's actions today warranted a penalty?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't have any doubt about that, to be honest. I mean, for me personally, I think he should have already had a race ban for what he did in the sprint in Miami, personally, the way he acted in that. But he didn't obviously do that. They gave him a lot of penalty points for it. And you look at today's incident, I think the only thing that you could possibly say that saves Magnussen on this, or should save Magnussen, I should say, is the fact that there is room to the left of Sergio Perez. There is some room there. If Perez moves to the left, there is room for Magnussen. But unlike what Ayrton Senna says, sometimes you shouldn't go for a gap. Sometimes it's not worth it. They were battling over 17th place on the first corner of the first lap of Monaco. And K-Mag is going for that like he's going for a race win or some points maybe, which would be huge for Haas. But no, they're battling over 17th. And he's battling a car that, even if he overtakes him, as much as we, you know, have a go at Perez and everything, as much as we have a go at him, he's trying to overtake a car that would be absolutely, in a best case scenario, absolutely just on his gearbox for 78 laps. Like, what's that going to achieve? What's that going to do? And what happened instead is that you have a very scary crowd. I mean, there was barely anything left of Perez's car. Like, they didn't show it at first. I didn't realize it happened until they actually went back to the drivers and showed them on the track. I didn't actually see a crash at first, maybe because they were thinking, oh God, this could be quite a nasty one, like they didn't show Zhou Guanyu at Silverstone a couple of years ago, because there was a chance he might not have walked away from that one. Thankfully, Perez did, and he seemed all right. But yeah, a really scary crash in a fast part of the track. And as well, I think you could touch on it as well, Owain. You know, that's $30, $40 million worth of damage or whatever for Haas. That's two cars destroyed in a cost cap era for a team that's struggling. All right, they're doing all right with the results relatively, but this really might bite them. This might mean that they can't, you know, develop cars for the rest of the year or for a significant time. So it's got far-reaching consequences beyond just the crash itself, you know. So yeah, I am shocked that he's not got a penalty personally, and controversial opinion, I know, but I feel like the fact that if he got 2 points on his super license, he would get a race. But I feel like they did probably weigh on the stewards. I think, for a lack of a better term, they bottled it. So that's my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'll give my opinion in a moment. Owen, what do you think about the, I was going to say Perez penalty? No, he penalised himself by qualifying P17. What do you think about the Magnussen lack of penalty?
I mean, I'll answer that question. I think it's very similar to in a football match when you see, you know, a player get a yellow, you know, an initial yellow, and then they do another challenge later on, and it by rights, you know, if you took that later challenge in isolation, you'd go, that's a yellow card. But it's not, it doesn't seem big enough to give, you know, a full, you know, it doesn't seem big enough to give a full, sorry, it doesn't seem big enough with the added implication that it's going to cause us, you know, it's going to be a two yellows on the trot in one match, and that means it's a red card. And I think that's sort of what's going on here. I've explained that really, really badly, but you do get that sense on occasion that maybe they just didn't want to give a race ban. And for me, as an incident, I genuinely think, given the penalty that Esteban Ocon got, which was on his own team, and I know that shouldn't be mean that, sorry, on his own teammate, and I know that shouldn't make a difference to how it's counted, but I feel like it is. I think if we were to go back, you know, through the incidents that we've seen over the years, typically those are more lenient because obviously it should be internal. You know, Lewis Hamilton, for example, back in, I mean, it's a relatively similar incident, but Lewis Hamilton, I don't believe, got a penalty or anything for what happened at, was it Canada 2011? You know, that was team on team. And I genuinely don't think that the Ocon incident is as bad. I think he moves across and he doesn't, you know, Ocon was so eager to get ahead of Gasly that, you know, he moved across left when he should have really squared the car up more. But, you know, Magnussen, on the other hand, had two cars behind him, only one directly behind in the form of Zhou. And yet he kept his foot in. And as you say, it wasn't for a race win. This was for 17th place on the first lap of the Monaco Grand Prix. And, you know, a race where anything can happen, you know, just taking it in isolation, I think by the letter of the law, that is causing a collision. As you say, George, he's possibly saved by the fact that Perez could have been further left. But the fact is, not to go on about the Ayrton Senna quote too much, but it's a gap that exists. And you can see it as plain as day on the replay from Magnussen's point of view. That is a gap that is closing. You know, you can see where Perez is going. You can't tell me that Magnussen doesn't know which way that barrier goes. It seems like a man driving out of desperation because of all the issues that they've had in the previous Grand Prix. And yes, they've got a point or two out of that. I think all I can say is, I think he deserved a ban for that. You know, for all the incidents combined that we've seen over the last few years, it's as bad as, sorry, not a few weeks, as we've seen, you know, we saw with Grosjean similarly. And I think that, you know what, I hope the money from everything that was done in the previous couple of rounds, I hope that covers your repair bill, because that's what you've got to hope for. That is, I mean, that, you know, Perez's car was completely destroyed, and that's not even to talk about all the marshals that were at the side. That's an area of the track, admittedly, on the other side that has a number of people because it's a street circuit. There's any number of different ways that could have gone wrong at 140 miles an hour, and I think he was lucky he wasn't worse, genuinely.
Yeah. Strong words there from Alain, and I do sort of agree with you as well. You made a very, very good point, actually. You know, if you think about sort of where it is, you know, it's on a street circuit. It's, you know, it's just not a good look for anybody involved, is it? And it's, you know, my view on it, I just decided, if you want to hear more 5-star takes on this, you should leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, not Google, because they're going away, Verbal Pocket Cast, all that good old stuff. And I almost forgot about the segue, so there you go. Not one of my finest. But no, it's, yeah, I really think the FIA almost afraid to put the driver to the 12 points by this stage, because if we look back at the incident, and if we look at where K-Mag's car was, he will know that the racing line up that hill is more or less sort of straight, because the racing line, you take the path of least resistance. You don't follow it like you're driving in a road car. You go as straight as possible. And at no point was he alongside, let alone ahead of Perez. He left his front axle there, knowing that gap would close, and he left his front axle there hoping he would get away with it, and he didn't. And he caused that collision by leaving his front axle there, if you ask me. Which was like hiccups, and I'm trying to stop it because we're professional here, like we talk. You know, he left his front axle there with a sort of like half in, half out approach, and you know, it was just a bit sort of lazy from him. And one of you made a good point earlier. I can't remember which one of you it was. Sorry, I think it was you, Owen. But it's 50-50, like Perez's front axle. It was, you know, he left it there, sort of hoping that he would get away with it, and he didn't. And he spun Perez off. You know, as you said earlier, George, they didn't show the replay at first because of how badly damaged that Red Bull was. You know, we are lucky that F1 safety has got to a point where Perez is able to hop out of that car. And if you want to finish a race, you have to, you know, what's the age-old phrase? If you want to finish first you have to finish. Now, I know they're battling at the back of the field, but, you know, the point still stands. If they want to finish, because you don't know what's going to go on in front of you for the next 77, 78 laps, if you want to, if either any of those drivers wanted to get something out of that race, and if Magnussen wants to keep his seat for next year, half sticking your wheel at the inside at Monaco is not the answer. And bearing in mind the sort of trailblazing reputation he's left himself this year, he's not doing himself any favours. And with people like Ollie Bearman, you know, sniffing around for that seat at Haas. You know, he was already done a really good standing this year for Ferrari a couple of months back. You know, as the kids say, it's not looking good, Brev. And, you know, K-Mag reeks of desperation by this point. And he's becoming a bit of a liability, if you ask me. If we want drivers to feel safe on the grid, well, we could do without a rampant sort of, you know, Danish bakery coming flying in from, you know, up the inside of Monaco, and there is no gap. So on that sort of on that note, chaps, I just want to give you a good chance to promo anything. Now I know we're all hosts here at the Lovely Liquid Talk stuff. But if you'd like to give something else a shout out, please do. So George, if you want to give us a, you know, sort of executive summary or something.
Yeah, sure. I mean, if you want to see and hear more from me, you can go over to F1 Chronicle or Football Chronicle. We do a lot of articles. We do a lot of videos now as well. So you can catch those on all the usual social platforms. And the biggest one is Microsoft Start as well. So yeah, go and check us out on there. So if you want to see some more stuff from F1, I reckon I'll probably be doing another rant about Kevin Magnussen. So if you want to hear something similar to what I just said again about why you should get a race banned, head over there.
So cheers, mate. And Owen, just tell us a bit about yourself as well.
I don't have anything to say about me, but one thing I would say is, given that some of the racing that we saw towards the, maybe, you know, the back of the field was more indicative of an F2 race, if you'd like to hear about actually F2, not you know, the guys pay the big bucks to be able to keep it out the wall or each other, then I would listen to Formula Talk by our very own Sophia Richmond to hear what, you know, to hear about all the Formula 2 and Formula 3 action that happened this week.
Brilliant. Cheers, mate. Yes. So, you know, you still want to hear more from me? Well, I don't really have social media anymore. So, you know, the only place you'll really sort of find it is here. But your talk is available on YouTube, where most episodes are recorded live, as well as Amazon Fire, Spotify, Apple Music, Verbal, Pocket Cast. Just search Formula 1 Grid Talk for our back catalogue of shows with previews and reactions to qualifying and race results. Please consider supporting the channel on Patreon so we can get mics, lights, and better recording equipment. Also, make sure you are subscribed so you're the first to know when each new weekly episode is released. We will be back soon with plenty more F1 content, but we do have one more thing to ask, as Ryan just reminded me in a Zoom chat because I'm an absolute idiot and forgot. George, who was your driver of the day?
Well, to quote the great Phil Matthew, it was Charles E. Clair. You can't really go for anybody other than him. Like I said, an absolutely perfect weekend for him in his home race.
Yeah. Owen, who's your driver of the day?
I'm not about the trend. It's obviously it's Charles Leclerc. You know, he's had a Toyota moment, as it were. You know, broken the curse.
He has. He's absolutely finally broken the curse. And I'm going to break the trend. And I'm going to say, Logan Sargeant, because he made it over. No, I am obviously going to say Charles. He has won his home race after putting it on pole and holding out for the entirety of the race. Blah, blah, blah. So thank you very much for listening to the Grid Talk podcast presented by Best Online. Thank you for putting up with my waffling, and goodbye.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.